or people who wanted to bring a mom and dad and a kid or a child or two or three and go to the Hall of Fame, and they were looking for a quick, reasonable place to get a lunch and maybe be on their way or go back to wherever they were staying and come back again the next day. They were not what I would call an ideal target family to buy antiques. In many cases, some families are stretched to come here. They don't want to hear about the luxury of buying antiques. I mean, it's not what they're into, or it's not why they're here, so they don't focus on it. And yet some other tourists do. I had a friend who had a successful shop on Chestnut Street. He did pretty well. Eventually, he closed and moved away, and a lot of shops since the downturn, economic downturn, they've closed or retired or passed away or moved south or something as they got along in years. It just depends on who you talk to and what their experience has been, whether the effect of tourism in Cooperstown has been good or bad, excuse me, for antiques. You know, maybe the net effect is a gain, because tourism of people coming through Cooperstown aren't all looking for baseball, maybe more so than it used to be. I don't know. I'm not in a position to say. But in the end, you have more exposure to the people coming in who are maybe just curious. They want something bad. Geez, I've got to have this. And, you know, I don't care about baseball. But if they don't come to the Village and you have a shop in town, if they don't come here, you can't sell them anything. You know, they have to see it. It's like my brother once told me, who, as I said, had been in sales a long time, and he knows a great deal, I believe, about that whole process. He said, the only thing you guarantee by not stopping to see somebody is that you will buy nothing or sell nothing. If you don't try to make it happen, if you don't do your best, you stand zero chance of doing some good by buying something, you know. I mean, I'm not out proselytizing to people. No, thanks. But if you don't try, you never know, you know. So by having a shop in the Village and it's open and you're getting exposure for people who have never been here before, who have been here every summer, you may do some good. But as an aside, tourism today, which still involves, it's mostly family focused. I mean, you hear about the Dreams Park people all the time, for better or worse. But a lot of the antiques market today, I think, suffers in general, be it tourists or whoever, because a lot of young people who are in their, you know, 20-somethings, 30-somethings, they're not into antiques. You know, they're not looking for that stuff to buy. I mean, I was at that age more just enthralled by it. And just amazed that somebody would put up the money, a giant amount of money in a city, as a repository for antiques and objects and even archaeological finds. I thought, wow, what a stroke of luck that somebody did this, or Rockefeller, or somebody who's a real benevolent sort, Clarks, did all this to preserve these things. I was just blown away by that. I mean, that's direction, focus, and resources. I was very impressed. But a lot of young folks today don't care for this stuff. I don't know what your focus is at the museum. But anyway, I mean, are any of your classmates enthralled by objects?
Oh, yeah.
Are they?
Oh, yeah. Good. A significant portion of them are collections focused.
Good, good. Well, I mean, there's so much to do with collections, from, display and I mean, from A to Z. The things, at least, that I remember are display and storage and insurance and rotating exhibits, treating them properly, thematic exhibits, you know. What are you focusing on here? What's the point behind this? I mean, I love that stuff. I'm glad they are, because I think that may come and go with different classes. Maybe, I'm not sure. I haven't been real close with other classes. But I love the class I was in, and I knew the one before and after me pretty well. They were always interesting people, always interesting kids, I say, because I was older than a lot of my fellow classmates.
Yeah. Have you met Cindy Falk?
Yes.
Yeah, program has, and she's from Winnetar, so.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's a sterling recommendation, I think, because Gib Vincent was one of my instructors, and he was a Winnetar alum, and I learned so much from him. It was such a treat. Yeah.
And why did you choose to stay in the Cooperstown area?
Well, you know, I interviewed for a couple of museum jobs, and I think one of them I could have had, but frankly, they just didn't pay much. I don't know. I suppose that's still the case many places. But you've got to live on something. And at around the same time, I was visiting an antique shop that handled a lot of things of the type that I liked. And I remember two things about it. One is they were very, very high priced. And the other thing is the guy who was going out to see people on what they called house calls, I thought, this guy's a little bit overbearing and not exactly tactful. And I remember saying to my wife, look, if he can do it, I can do it. Because I'd learned way back something about talking to people from my first job, which was in a general store. And the old ladies in that store, boy, you know, they want things a certain way, and you better not ruffle the feathers. And I brought all of that with me, an interest in and a certain amount of ability to talk to total strangers. And I remember that, thinking that if this guy who is sort of a jerk can do this, I can do this. I remember that. It was like a stepping off point. And that's what started me on the way, you know, which is, that's a long time ago now.
Is there a reason why you chose, like, the Cooperstown area?
Oh, yes, to get back to that. Well, you know, I like the area. Mm-hmm. I love the history. And again, with Gib Vincent, we toured places. We went to Canada on a field trip, New England, and so on. And it was a great thrill. But I had reinforcement about this love of objects at every turn. And I just thought, this whole area has been settled long enough ago that there's many generations, potentially, of objects and people and stories out there. And I thought, maybe I could uncover some of that. And I did. I started and I did. It was really a treat. It still is. As I say, it's still a privilege. I was quite sick a couple years ago, and I was really never so glad to get on my feet again, is to be able to go out and darken someone's doorstep, you know, not knowing what's behind door number one. It's really fun. You ought to try that sometime, you know.
I would love to.
Well, you might be really good at it, because a young woman doesn't threaten anybody, but at the same time, you got to be careful, because there's some real nut jobs out there. But, you know, if you get a bad vibe, take off, you know.
Yeah, thanks for that tip.
I'm just saying, that's a kind of caveat you have to know. You have to understand. I'm sure you know you're not naive, but you got to be careful, you know.
Mm-hmm. And how do you pick things to buy?
Well, it's mostly based on two things. I buy things either that I like and enjoy right away, and I don't care if I don't sell it, or I buy things that I know I can sell. And with the downturn in the economy, that variety of things has narrowed considerably, because a lot of things that were strong 10 years ago may be on life support now. But there's signs of life out there. And I don't know why it is, except it's maybe just local economics and local enthusiasm. If we went due east into Vermont, I go there every year to a weekend of shows, 5 shows anyway. Things sell better there and for more money, and I don't understand why. However, you know, it's just the way it is. So if I come across something I like a lot, I'll buy it. And not to separate it necessarily from something that's very saleable, but it's got to be something with a reward at the end. Either I can sell it for a profit, or I can keep it indefinitely. Well, actually, I've kept a lot of things, and I maybe have kept too many things. Once in a while, my wife tells me that. Or I'll bring something home, and I'll say, listen, the only place I can think of this truly is on your side of the bed. She says, yeah, your dreams. So find someplace else for it.
How do you know they're going to sell?
Well, I guess there's some indicators that they're going to sell. The first thing, if the total stranger, I'll knock on the door. When they come to the door, there's a lot of things I don't do and a few things I do. So if I can get on a decent, even footing with them in about 10 seconds, maybe, I'll mention who I am, where I'm from, and that I happen to stop because I'm looking for things to buy, you know, and that I only offer cash for what I buy, and that I would be grateful for a chance to, say, look in a garage or a basement. But I make it, you can't be condescending. Never wear extreme weird clothes. No tattoos, you know. Some people are offended by that, and they may never say it, but they are, and you never have a second chance. So no tattoos, nothing political, no labels if I can help it. No hair on my face, no down over my eyes, no beard, though I used to have a short, close-cropped beard. No dark glasses, no Win with Trump stickers. Some people may say, God, come right in. And somebody else may say, get lost. So, you know, by walking the midline, you're better off than if you take a chance on impressing somebody and it turns out to be wrong and it blows up in your face. So there's that. I wonder if I answered your question.
Yes, you did.
Okay.
What are your thoughts on the History Channel show, American Pickers?
Well, you know, I think that, I mean, I have some issues with it in that it's not, that show does not exist in the world that I live in. But if they haven't made by what they've created, good for them. I don't know if I told you this, one of their producers called me once, and this is 2 years ago on Labor Day weekend, and asked me whether I may have had anything, been given my name by a woman in the Johnstown, New York area, and did I maybe have things that they would want to buy on the show? And I said, I probably do, but I'm not interested. I wasn't interested. But you know, television, to some extent, is a creation. It's entertainment. It doesn't necessarily reflect the world, per se, that we all live in. Just parts of it and pieces of it. Like at the end of the episodes where everybody they've bought from stands outside and waves goodbye to them. Oh, you know, I've been glad to get out of some of those places I've been in thinking, oh, God, let me out of here. You know, because it's not always a comfy, cozy relationship. Mm-mm. No. To me, that's to some extent contrived, but I could be wrong. I've heard other shows on, other so-called reality shows are contrived, and I believe it, but I don't care about them much. You know, do you watch it?
I did.
Did you? Did you like it?
Well, I love antiques. I don't know much about them, but
yeah.
I grew up watching the History Channel, so it was just one of those shows that
made me excited. It's a good channel. You know, HGTV used to have a much greater emphasis on antiques than it does now. Now it's almost exclusively real estate, right? But they used to have a greater emphasis on antiques, and I used to love some of those things, but they're gone. And really, the only way to learn more is by doing. And I've learned a lot. Beyond the things we studied here at Cooperstown, I've learned a lot more about other things that are 20th century and what people love and, you know, a lot of things about successive generations of families where some families hold things in high regard and cherish them for generations, and then all of a sudden one generation decides, hell with that, who needs it, and stuff's out of here. You know, I talked to one man and his sister. I couldn't believe it. They had inherited a large house full of stuff, whatever it was, I don't know. I could never get next to them. But he said, we'd made a decision yesterday, and anything that was made of paper, we burned. So that was just like, I thought, I can't believe that. You people must be idiots. But it was a means to an end for them, you know? So I didn't tell them what I was thinking, of course, but it didn't matter in the end. I could never get close enough or next to them enough to do business. They were just, I don't know, sort of hostile. Or maybe it was me, you know? You never know.
Without mentioning any names, can you tell me about some of your clients?
Well, one woman I know in the Mohawk Valley, nice lady, and I've met so many nice people there in the Mohawk Valley, lots of history. I knew her husband, and he's deceased. And these people were living in their present location for I'm not sure how long. He had retired. He was older than she was. And he died. He went to a nursing home and died. And the house was, at one time, it was a really, really nice little cute cape house. Not old, but nice. Nicely done. Nice proportions. Good staircase and all that. I liked it. But it was extremely filthy. And they had cats that were like everywhere. And the cats, I don't think, got a litter box changed often enough or were taken to the vet when they may have had problems because the place was really bad. And I bought things from them. But I tried to buy nothing from them that I couldn't wash. And she had this beautiful kitchen. I remember all these really nice modern day or, you know, 30, 40-year-old cherry cabinets, and it was expensive in its day and would be expensive today to duplicate, and the place was a dump. So eventually, and they were nice people, real nice. They were nice to me, and I mean the place was bad, but I hope I didn't let on to them that I thought this place is like, whoa, off the scale. But they let me look, and I bought a few things, you know. And then eventually he went to a nursing home for rehabilitation, and he died there. But before he died, she had a really nice ramp put in so that he could navigate that. And he never did come home, and the ramp's still there. And the place is not as bad as it was because the cats are gone. I think they all just died. And they're nice people. You know, and it's funny, not far from there is another woman I know whose father-in-law, or let's say grandfather-in-law, used to carve things, and he had been in World War I. He came home and he carved these things that I like, animals and people, small scale things. And she's across the street and down, and her place is spotless. It's just a difference in people and priorities. I didn't care, you know. It's funny, the woman across the street and down who had the carvings and still does have some, I bought some from her about 25 years ago at least. I bought from her relatives, the carver was gone. He'd come home from World War II and carve things, and whatever he had to deal with, he died. So his son and daughter-in-law were living in this house, and they had this funky carved cat standing there, spotted cat, like a leopard. And so I was able to buy it from them, and I still have it. I really liked it. Then since then, I bought some more carvings by the same guy, and she still has some things I'd like to buy. But it's just the difference in people, separated by 100 yards. It's just a matter of, you know, what's behind door number one, besides objects, people, habits. But the lady with the really dirty house, which doesn't smell as bad as it used to, has a lot more things that I would buy. I don't think she's going to sell them. I saw some really nice jewelry there the other day. And I said, she didn't want to sell it. And I said, listen, I'm never going to rip you off. I'm not going to steal anything from you. But I said, you need to be careful who you let in to see this stuff because it's too easy to pocket. And she says, oh, I'm careful. I says, good, you need to be. Because there's nobody else there. Her relatives are all in the South. So, you know, there we go. I get my Boy Scout badge. But I just thought it was important to tell her that in case she wasn't thinking that. Because her husband had died and he trusted me and therefore she trusted me. We got along fine. So she would know, you know?
And you touched on this a little bit, but how has living and working in New York State around the Mohawk Valley, around the leather stocking region, shaped your appreciation for material culture?
Well, it shaped it by way of the things I found and the abundance of things that I've found. Because as I said, a lot of the things that interested me are of an age that keeps my interest keen, and I don't find them as much as I used to, believe me. But I still find interesting things, and I've seen wonderful things that I could not buy. No way. They weren't for sale. But it was such a treat to see them, you know? Within sight of the Mohawk River, I once upon a time bought a spoon rack, which is an old thing, 18th century dowry gift type thing, you know, along with pinwheels and so on. And it was such a marvelous day because I remember saying to my wife, really, about a week before in a book, there's a picture of a spoon rack. I says, oh, God, there's something I'll never find. And I found it, and I was able to buy it. And I was so excited. I walked into this, it was like an implement shed on the farm. And I walked in, and this nice man let me do this, walk around. And I've seen him since because he's moved. And I saw that on the wall, and before I knew it, I said, holy shit. He says, is there something wrong? I says, no, everything's all right. And I was just really surprised. I was shocked. And so it had some, like, wheels in it from a lawnmower in the bottom box part. And I said, is this something you need? He says, no, I can put those wheels anywhere. And I was able to buy it from him. But in that case, I was really nervous because I knew that it had, in some circles, real good value. But I didn't dare offer him too much because he would take it off the wall, take it in the house, and start asking around, and I would lose. You know, I mean, it's in many respects, it's selfishness. I wanted to buy it. I found it. I don't think anybody else had seen it. And I thought, if I don't do this right, he's going to keep it. And so I had one chance to buy it. I mean, sometimes in a case like that, you do. Especially if it's something that they are already aware is on the scarce side. They realize they have something, and they're holding out for the highest price. And sometimes it gets much higher, and sometimes it comes back to bite them because they'll keep something too long and the prices will trickle away, and they miss the boat. So I bought that, and 1900 stick and ball type archway divider, you know, that would come down from the ceiling. It was a low flattened arch in a Federal Revival type look, but it had Victorian influence because it was intersecting sticks with balls on them. You know, you may have seen that before. Made of oak, was very nice, and I sold that to a friend. And how I did that was I made him a bigger offer for the divider, the architectural garniture, than I did the other thing. It was just a way of getting it so that I didn't focus on that alone, you know, and ring any bells. I hope it's okay to tell you that, but it's true. I mean, you got to be careful.
And how's business lately?
Business lately is okay. I'm going to this place tomorrow I mentioned to you. I don't know if I can do business with them. One of the things they have that interests me, because I'm not somebody who has an interest in jewelry. I don't care about it. I don't ever wear jewelry. But But when it comes to precious metals, there is a known market for that stuff. And even though it's dropped a lot in 5 years, it's still there. So you have to buy right. And so at this place, somebody had looked at some of this big pile of jewelry they had there. A lot of it was costume, some of it was junk, some was broken, but there was some precious metal there in various carats of gold, probably mostly 10 and 14. And they had a price tag there, or an estimated value of several hundred dollars. Well, I'm hoping you get a chance to see it and look at it and weigh it and just see what the value is now, because there's a man I deal with who pays very well as he can. But it seems high. And this was 3-4 months ago they had this, and it's been dropping off since. I mean, not long ago, platinum dropped $110, just dropped. So it's interesting. So business is okay. I go home a lot of days with nothing, absolutely nothing. And some days I get lucky or whatever and find things that I can buy that I want. Once in a while, somebody will call me up and say, you remember this, whatever you wanted to buy, do you still want to buy it? And, so business to some extent is luck. Also, it is what you make it by being persistent, not losing faith in what you do, continuing to believe in what you do. If it becomes too big an effort, I'm too selfish, I'll switch to something else. But I love this. I like working for me. I'm too selfish to work for anybody else. I really am. That's one of the things that sustains me. I have myself to blame, if something goes wrong. But at the same time, if it goes right, I have myself to give credit to.
Well, I think that concludes our interview. I've gotten through all of the questions that wanted to ask. Yes.
Oh, my good Lord. Look at that.
Yeah. Thank you so much for...
I hope it was helpful, Julie.
...participating. It was. It's been wonderful. So thank you so much.
You're welcome so much.